Welcome to the Fatigue Super Conference, and my guest for this interview is Erin Elizabeth. Erin is known as, also known as Dr. Mercola's better half. Erin Elizabeth is a long-time health nut, which I'm sure we'll explore what that means, author and health expert who has had a passion for the healing arts for nearly 25 years. She's an author of In the Limelight, which is available on her website for free. She's also a journalist writing breaking health-related news stories and speaking at large health conferences around the US. Erin, thank you so much for being with us on the Fatigue Super Conference.
Thank you, Alex. It's an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
So I was really interested to learn more about your story, having explored some of your stuff on YouTube and also reading your ebook, which I have to say I felt was very brave in terms of sharing the not just the story, but some of the challenges that one goes on a healing path. So we'll come in this interview into your experience with Lyme and some of the different kind of twists and turns. But one of the things that just struck me as a kind of starting point was that you've been a bit of a survivor through your life, even right from birth, that you survived abortion as a starting point. I mean, that's a pretty wild way to come into the world.
Yes, it really is. I've just had my mom visiting and with my birth mother, had the two mothers together, and we had been discussing that. And I do realize how fortunate I am. So sometimes there are challenges, but I look at the bright side too, that, hey, I might not have been here at all. So yeah,
right.
Yes, it was definitely, started off with some challenges. That's true. And being hospitalized for the first few months of my life with no mother coming to visit. Yeah, I'm sure that, but I never really thought about that until later on in life, but a lot of healing that was needed after that.
So. Yes, I'm sure. And I know that through your kind of 20s and I guess early part of 30s had a wonderful life in lots of ways and were kind of struggling in different ways with kind of health and energy. And I'm sure people that are watching or listening to this, many of those will resonate with that kind of trying to keep up with the demands and the kind of expectations of one's life whilst really not feeling good physically. Maybe just say a bit about how that was and how you kind of got through that period.
Sure. I'd be happy to. Yes. So after I was adopted, it was, I'll just quickly say, winter, Chicago, I had a bad cold and they did do a DPT. So the diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus shot, and I had a bad reaction, probably having a bad cold and possibly being double vaccinated then at the adoption agency or in hospital where they didn't know that because then I'm getting moving to a whole new place and new parents. So I was very, very sick. They believe I had encephalitis, but they had to do a spinal tap. At first they thought spinal meningitis. So I did start off with some real challenges. And then through the years, I just thought it was normal to be kind of not feeling well all the time. I didn't understand how other people, my mind had lots of energy, like my brain was always going, but physically I didn't quite have the energy as other people and I didn't thrive, although I'm like 5'10", wasn't great at basketball. They thought I would want to play because I was so tall, but not super coordinated. And even if I did, I did all right. But having the energy to do that was difficult. And then I also recently, even since I wrote that book, had discovered, because I'm adopted, I didn't realize on my birth father's side, I had Ehlers-Danlos syndrome as well. So often you'll see people who have EDS and then will also have Lyme as well. So I found that out only after I've written the book, and I definitely need to update that book. So yeah. And then, unfortunately, it seems like we always do things to ourselves. Well, actually, I had an accident ice skating, so I was trying to do like these Tonya Harding moves that didn't work out. It wasn't super coordinated, and so I didn't really think about this till now. So I had a bit of a crash. And when you bleed on the ice, when there's water involved and ice, it looks like a whole lot more blood than it is. So they took me to, somebody called an ambulance, and so I come go in an ambulance to the, and they did it. Then they did another DTaP shot, which probably when I was really sick and I was having I was in the middle of having my, over a 2-day period, I was supposed to be in the next morning to have my amalgam fillings taken out because of the mercury, probably not back in the 90s, the best, they weren't doing it the safest way or taking safety precautions. So I was very, very sick again. And I'd always kind of overcome these times where I had these illnesses in my life. But it's funny that then some of the illnesses, because I'd always kind of been lanky, thin. And so I had, although at times I had then gained a lot of weight too, which I talk about, but I had, and it's somewhere in that mix, I did get one surgery besides dental work, and that was a saline implant. So I got breast implants, which I'm very open about and I talk about in the book. And then that was probably still to this day, like the worst, where I was the sickest I'd ever been within months after having those. And I thought, I don't even know how I just did. We all make mistakes, so I don't even try to justify it. I just did it. And I don't judge those who do it. I have helped a lot of people who come to me before they, sometimes different doctors, Lyme literate medical doctors or doctors, will ask me if I can just talk to a patient because they're scared to get them out and can I tell them my experience. But some are, and some of those women are breast cancer survivors. So they got the implants after maybe having a double mastectomy, and then they felt that necessary. So I don't judge anyone who does it after children or whatever the case may be. But for me, they made me very sick. So 7 years ago, which I wasn't as many people doing it 7 years ago as now, as there are now, I did have those removed in Atlanta under a 6-hour general anesthesia. It was not easy, but it was kind of like, sometimes I felt like I had to get a little worse to get better, but eventually did heal from that. Yes. And then
just to respond on that one of the things that struck me reading in your book, because it's, I should say that the problems with silicone breast implants are something that I would say really only in the last year or two is something that I've noticed had some level of mainstream attention here in the UK. It may be that it's a little bit behind the US, but what I was particularly struck by the way you described it in your book and in an online video that you did was the explanation around mold, and mold, something we've talked about in some of the other interviews that we've done here as part of the normally the problem with mold is someone is in a moldy environment, and what the way you put it was mold was inside of you.
Inside me. Yeah. And I don't know where I came up with that along the way, but yes. So that was really tough when they did take the implants out, especially one, they had a leaky valve, which is very common. And that was even saline. And I believe the FDA, I know within days or weeks, we're doing a story as a journalist on the, they're going to be meeting about breast implant illness, which is shocking, on BII, as we call it. And I never thought I would, I don't know if I ever thought I would see that day, but I think people are waking up, because I thought because I did saline, it would be safe. But they, if you get, depending on the manufacturer, you can get a very leaky valve and then mold grows, and just like, I mean, yeah, and it's inside you. So it took some recovery time after that for sure. And then in the midst of all this, I had seen Dr. Klinghart first 10 years ago when Dr. Mercola and Joe took me to see Dietrich Klinghart, and he would treat me, but he didn't, I don't know, maybe I didn't, I think I've had Lyme for many years, and I fully believe that, but they tested and didn't see it, but also maybe the implants were an issue that were showing up instead. There were a lot of things probably a lot of things they saw with muscle testing and whatnot when he treated me those couple of times, and he's about as far as we can get from here to go to Seattle, from probably closer to go, you know, across the pond, because it takes so long to get to Seattle from where we are in Southeast United States. So then I decided to have the Western blot Lyme test. And interestingly, I just found out days ago, because I didn't understand them back then, but they said I had a negative IgG, but a positive IgM. So that would mean that it had been a recent exposure, but I didn't know that at the time. So nobody recommended, not that I would have, but some people feel that the only time that they might do antibiotics is if they were just a recent exposure. But no one even told me that part of the equation. Right. I think because knowing, it's such a honor to know so many doctors, but when there's so many, everyone may kind of glance, but I didn't have one real dedicated, and Joe, that's not his specialty, is Lyme, that was really studying it with me, and Dietrich was far away, and I think he may have looked at it, but I did still get better doing a protocol, which was a lot of what he said, and then Lee Cowden, I'm pretty open about that, Dr. Cowden treated me as well, and maybe they did, so I definitely was better. But what I learned is, I think being raised, I don't know if it's a Western thing, but I thought that because I had this idea, just how I was raised, kind of old school parents, both firstborn, they trust their doctor. And I thought, you know, once I do this protocol, I said, I can't wait when I went out to see Dr. Cowden, because he's a little closer. And tech all better. I have to watch all, because I'd always been careful with what I eat and was a health nut. But I think this, when I really delved into this, and I said to the woman, one of the women who helped run the clinic, who was a Lyme survivor herself. And I said, gosh, I just can't wait to be done with the protocol and just go back to normal. And she goes, really? You might not understand. This is kind of a lifetime maintenance. And that's really what I've learned. And then since then, the diagnosis of Ehlers-Danlos, because I'm very honest with my audience, having had a few steps backwards. I just hope that people realize, I do like to share that with them. And although I know some people would not recommend that, because I want people to realize that we're all human, and hopefully my audience might learn from me that you can always take a few steps backwards, but yes, there is always maintenance. And yes, if somebody has an autoimmune illness or Lyme or whatever it might be, or implants that they get out that they think, oh gosh, I'm going to take the protocol. And if perhaps that will be the case, that they're fortunate enough just to be like, oh, I did it and I was all better. Never thought about it again. And just, I can eat what I want. But that's not the case for me. And I think maybe so many of the listeners. And the other thing is, though, because I don't want to sound dismal, that it's like a lifetime thing. But on the other hand, for those who are trying and really following a protocol, or maybe they have a practitioner they're seeing and they're struggling, that I always want people to realize that there is, as I may say in that book, that there's light at the end of the tunnel, that, yes, that there will, yes, that even if somebody has been struggling for years, that I do see so many people who make a comeback, so to speak, for physically, because they've been so ill for so long. So,
yeah. And I think it's always tempting to want to have the Hollywood happy ending to health stories, yeah, right? That it's like, right, that the person has their final recovery, they walk off into the distance, and the credits roll, and the music plays, and it's kind of job done. But of course, yes, lives are continuing and unfolding, and that there's, when there's a lot of complexity to a case, like, you know, a lifetime of challenges that someone's body has been facing, for example, in your case, of course it makes sense that there's going to be it's almost like having a sequel, and having, you know, there are different chapters or different to that story, right?
Yes.
I'd like to see just kind of back up a little bit and go through some of this a little bit more, if that's okay, because you talked about the testing, and I actually remember reading in your ebook that you'd, at that point when you were writing that, your understanding was that you'd had a tick bite, I think, when you were 13 or 14 years old, when you were younger. Yes. So it's yeah, interesting, that kind of that deeper clarity. But of course, one of the problems is that testing for Lyme is often so ineffective. And actually, one statistic that I jumped out to me from reading your piece was that the true number of cases of Lyme in the US is probably 3 to 12 times higher than is actually reported. That's pretty staggering.
It really, yes, it really is. And I do believe they also think that I may have and multiple times that there may have been that I may have been infected, because I lived in Pennsylvania, which is the most has the most cases of Lyme in the United States. Everybody thinks it's Connecticut because Lyme, Connecticut, here in the United States, where Lyme the name is derived, but actually it's Pennsylvania. And I lived there and had the two dogs, and we go hiking, and I had good energy then, but then the energy, yeah, so did decline. It's definitely with Lyme or with any illness. Can you remind me?
It's testing.
Then sometimes that'll happen to me. Even today, we're all forgetter. Could just be that I'm like that naturally. But with as far as testing, I mean, I was lucky, I guess, to have a positive test, and then that the protocol worked. And I think what happened, and so that was, but so many people will have a false, that you'll see that have a false negative where they have, yeah. So it would be a false negative, false negative, where they really are positive. And yeah, I was bit on an eighth grade camping trip. So it would have been in the 80s before many people knew about, so many people are familiar with Lyme. And we just, you know, were eighth graders or just graduating eighth grade. So I think we went there for a couple of days, and you just, when you go home, you shower. There's not really any showering for the weekend. And so we had to wear long pants because of the ticks. They were actually concerned. And I remember, because we were in the woods, and they're so worried about all the bugs. So I didn't know with my having the jeans on. And then I saw it on the back of my leg when changing, so they could help get the tick off. And who knows if they did it correctly. So yeah, there's that. So yeah, it is unfortunate with the testing. But I know from other Lyme literate medical doctors who I've interviewed, or who have been my actual doctors, even if there were, they did have a negative test, that they still would may treat them under, I don't say under the guise of Lyme, but they may treat them still for those symptoms, which could be Lyme. Yeah, as you know, yeah, which definitely, and fatigue was a big part of that. I think still to this day, I don't quite have the energy I used to, even right initially after the treatment. And I think it's for me, the last 5 years having the site, it was, I'm kind of a workaholic. I put my energy into that, and way too long hours. So I talk about it with my audience, where I'm doing, like, I work 7 days a week. I don't take a day off. And Dr. Mercola is kind of the same way, but he's getting better. He's finally slowing down and taking breaks. And that's what I tell people, even just taking short breaks makes such a difference. Even if you can go outside and get grounded don't get any ticks on you, of course, but go outside and get really, you know, get grounded, or take time to meditate, even if it's inside, if the weather's bad, if you can't get out, or you're wherever you are. But that's very important to me, because it is, I think, for me, what I'm realizing is also the kind of the emotional clearing. Not that that isn't definite physical symptoms, and it's very real, but I think so much of it is that mind-body connection, that no matter what someone may have, whether it be chronic fatigue or whatever their health struggle might be, that there's that emotion. For me, what helps so much is the mental, emotional part of yes, as well. I'm still working on it.
I'd love to come to that a bit more in a bit, but I'd also, I'm just curious as to, as you were starting originally doing the Lyme treatment protocol with Dr. Count and Dr. Klinghart, did that feel quite overwhelming at that point? And I know you talked about kind of further down the path of, even at the maintenance point, but when you first started that, what was your emotional reaction? Was it one of excitement of having clarity, or was it one of kind of overwhelm of 'cause it could be quite intense going through those protocols with some of the die-off reactions, things that can happen?
Oh yes. And I think the most difficult part for me was the initial initial diagnosis, when they did say your test is positive, because I'd already had the ELISA test, not realizing that was not accurate, because of, you know, some doctor after one of the hurricanes said, oh, they did a Lyme test, but we have a lot of hurricanes here. So I've lost a few houses and had mold. And she said, oh yeah, we did a Lyme test, you're negative, not knowing about, you know, that you could have, especially with ELISA test, is often negative. So I think when they initially diagnosed me, I think first it was just like a week of then asking every doctor I knew to look at the test and confirm that it was positive, because I really was a little bit in denial, though I don't know why I should be, because having dogs, cats, they have, even if it weren't, I know there can be different ways of transmission besides ticks, but I don't know why it was just so shocking to me, even though I said after a while, then I accepted it. Then there were those phases that I went through. And then after I was in denial, then I accepted it and said, well, at least it's easy to pronounce, you know, Lyme, everybody knows what Lyme is. So it was super, super easy. But when I did the protocol, I was fortunate that for me, I guess I'm looking more at the end, kind of the end product, but at the beginning it was when I was first going through, no, there were some really difficult, times. Now it's coming back to me. Yes. When I was,
it's amazing how we compartmentalize these things, right?
I know, we really do. And so, yeah, that was very difficult. And I was lucky because I hadn't started my website yet, and I was working, but was able to take a little time off, thank God, because it is so difficult, because most people, and I totally realize that, one of the few times I've taken off any work in my life that, and I really had to, that it's for people who are working full time, have, you know, may, they may have several little ones, kids around the house or family or, and all those commitments, and then doing their best to overcome their health challenges at that same time, the struggles is just so, so difficult. And that's why sometimes I think it is okay to ask for help, where we, and I was okay because I didn't have the some of those other components and I was able to take a little time off work. But I think it is all right to, for somebody to maybe ask a family member, could they help with the kids or can they this? And people have to take it seriously. Oh, and that's the other thing I found, that even though it was, you know, my family sees this, it's okay, I think that still people are skeptical. They just, well, you know, of course there's the whole argument with chronic Lyme or even chronic Lyme or chronic fatigue, that still we see this skepticism by society, whether it be in the UK or the US and or we're at whatever country, and that people are that they are skeptical. I think if it's an, it could be another diagnosis that is, it's very strange. Have you noticed that, that especially with chronic illnesses, that people are, they're not as sympathetic, but then I see someone else and, oh my gosh, if they have something very acute going on, then it's, oh gosh, they could have, their people are more, if you have the flu and say, oh my God, I just got the stomach, bad stomach flu, people are so sympathetic. But if you say I have chronic Lyme or chronic fatigue, people are like, oh, okay. Yeah.
It's I personally think it's a massive problem, because I think what happens is that the lack of cultural understanding, which a big part of this, of course, is down to not having good diagnostic testing and therefore not having recognition in a kind of mainstream medical context. But that lack of cultural understanding results in this kind of this disbelief, this skepticism, the cynicism, which then results in a kind of, well, you just need to push through it. So one of the best predictors of long-term prognosis with ME chronic fatigue, for example, is early diagnosis, because early diagnosis stops someone from pushing through and ignoring it. So it's almost like the less understanding there is, the more people push, the more they push, the more sick they get, and the longer that the recovery journey becomes. So I think you're pointing to something which is a really big problem for people. And it's interesting that even for yourself, as someone that was living and breathing the kind of health world and had people around you that kind of understood that even then it was challenging with family and people to really get the emotional recognition and support that's important for people.
Oh yeah. And I will say that some of like the holistic, there was definitely ones who were very supportive, but there's some, and even some of the family who's not into so much into the holistic health world, but they then over just since my diagnosis or with getting the implants out or the other things, they will say, wow, I just saw a program. Sometimes it just takes one, or they saw a personal story, or you know what it is too. It's very strange how this works. They saw a celebrity, and I'm like, really? But that's if that's what it takes, you know, totally. Celebrities coming out, totally. Which I'm always would encourage any celebrity to, because when that celebrity does come forward, maybe it's one of these celebrities that more likely are women, but there are men too that have come forward maybe with Lyme or chronic fatigue, that people then listen. I'm not sure why that is, but that's a good thing. So that, you know, I guess
I'm just kind of thinking out loud, but I guess in some ways it's that cultural stamp of approval, right? So Avril Lavigne comes out and talks about having Lyme, and suddenly people are, oh, well, if she says it's legit, it must be a legit experience.
Yeah. And I think, isn't it, Joni Mitchell has talked about so many things. Somebody who's a little older than Avril Lavigne, but however you want to butcher her name. But Joni Mitchell, I don't know if she's taken as seriously, because she's talking about Morgellons too, which of course, since I know you said nothing's off limit, then we could go into Morgellons and all sorts of stuff. But I think part of her challenge has been definite chronic fatigue that she's discussed. And it is interesting. I think people, I mean, because everybody, I think even young and old alike, especially maybe I'm just liking to think all the young people know who Joni Mitchell is, but I think they do respect her, yet I never thought I'd be talking about the celebrities, but it's interesting that even then people say, they will still think that it's in your head. And the other thing is, I will still see doctors, especially not the holistic, but the conventional, because I'd had a fall and had 3 fractures. So that was scary when I was traveling for a speaking gig. So I had to because I try to stay away from conventional docs at all costs, but when I had to go there with fractures and then I got better from those. But when I was explaining, well, you know, I have Lyme, I didn't even know the Ehlers-Danlos yet, or I've if I have fatigue, I had was diagnosed with Lyme, overcame it, talk about any fatigue, anything. It's very interesting how they kind of poo-poo that. But although it is improving. So, yes. But I think that also amongst more conventional allopathic doctors, hopefully that will get better, in time.
Well, I think, and it really comes from people such as yourself being courageous and talking about your experience, because I think it's you know, yes, research is ultimately really important, but part of the stepping stones towards that is human stories and people sharing what's happened and how it's impacted them, which I think is a good segue into something that you touched on a little bit earlier, which is the role of psychology and the role of and of course the different tracks on this, but I suppose I'm interested both from the point of view of your own approach and attitude to believing that you could turn things around and getting well, but also dealing with some of the kind of stress burdens and that kind of thing. So yeah, I'd love to hear about how psychology has been part of your experience.
Sure. So for me, I know that I have the very strong mind-body connection, and that can be a good thing or a bad thing. So, So still to this day, as I think out loud now myself, it's I do believe that when I have that, I mean, I believe especially how the mind is you know, rules over the body, that if I'm really thinking in a positive way, and it could be a short term, we could have like the stomach flu or something, God forbid, but having something like that, and then my but I really have a positive mindset, not saying that's enough and that everyone's just going to start thinking positive and it's everything's just magically they're going to be 100% better, but I do think that is so important, and I don't think that can be emphasized enough. That is important. Another thing I do, because I so oftentimes see on my own page people saying, I don't even like to say it aloud, there are just certain things, like I've read about different cultures, like in India they don't even say, what if uncle so and so fell off the cliff there, and you know, they don't even say a what if. But I see people so often say, but with my Lyme or my cancer or my chronic fatigue, and somebody told me early on, say no, you know. And I always, if I'm doing a live video or whatever I'm doing, I explain that Mary or whoever it might be, they're like, my cancer, or my, say no, that the cancer I am overcoming, you know, but don't own it. So that, because I think I did that early on with Lyme, and I think the fatigue that came along with it. And somebody early on, thank goodness, said, I've kind of made that part of, we have language patterns that our brains, you know, it's very much our subconscious or our conscious mind, either one is going to hear. So I always have that mindset where I'm not going to say, my Lyme or my Ehlers-Danlos and I do think even with something like Ehlers-Danlos, which is kind of super hypermobility, that even though now I found out my birth father's side has it, and he and my birth mother are both ironically doctors, but I didn't really know his side very well, so I didn't know this. And she said, yeah, of course it was his side of the family. But I realized that even though I'm born with that, so it's a little different than Lyme, but that I believe that I can overcome so much of that or maintain. So that's kind of that you're not, I mean, I believe in epigenetics too. So that it doesn't mean that I'm going to be set for the same road or route that a family member might be, that I'm not, don't have to be destined for that, and keep a positive, positive attitude.
It's a really interesting point you make around recognizing that something is part of your life at this point, but not taking that as an identity. And it just reminds me that I had ME chronic fatigue for 7 years as a teenager, which was why I got involved in this work. And for the last few years of my recovery journey, which was a, say, 7 year journey, my then girlfriend was also recovering from ME chronic fatigue. And after about 6 months of being together, I was at university in Wales and she was in London. We kind of realized that every time we spoke, we were speaking from this identity of how are your symptoms? How are you? And it was like, we were connecting by the fact that we were sharing this disease together. And we really had to work to change our language. And it wasn't then to pretend this thing wasn't happening and rip away any support, but just to be very deliberate and careful about how we were self-referencing our experience and how we were talking about it, and identifying as someone that was recovering from something, not someone that was suffering from something. So I think it's a really helpful point that you're making.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I also want to say that even though I had grown up with health challenges, I don't think to the point where I got at my lowest of low, probably after the implants, which didn't help that I had Lyme at the same time and EDS. And I remember my mom, interestingly, although I'm not sure what her feelings were, but she said she had a friend with, you know, chronic fatigue and severe chronic fatigue. And I admit, I probably don't say it enough, but that at the time I didn't have sympathy for her friend. I didn't get it because you couldn't see it. It wasn't, and this was years ago, but before anything that happened to me. But, and even though I had had some, probably I think I had chronic fatigue way back and as a new diagnosis, or at least to the general public, that I remember not feeling the sympathy. And still to this day, I think, wow, now, or fibromyalgia too, because she had a fibromyalgia diagnosis. And I was just, that word was just, you know, this was over a quarter century ago. And now I really get it. And I always think, gosh, so I keep that in mind because I had that mindset at one time that, come on, fibromyalgia. And I was getting into holistic health, but this is probably 25 years ago. And now I realize, gosh, there are people out there that think like me, but they can change their mind. So if somebody has a loved one and they're just not getting it, especially maybe upon the initial diagnosis, that they can come around and understand. And sometimes if that celebrity, if you tell them a certain musician has it and that doesn't do it for them, then documentaries or even videos or things, or they can read published studies, and hopefully that their family members will come around. Because that's an important thing to me, is having that support system and that people identify, and at least they don't have to be physically doing anything, but just that, you know, the closest ones around you, your loved ones, you want them to at least support you. And
that's right. You certainly don't want them making things worse, but ideally what you want is at least, you know, that human need where you all have to be seen and to be validated. It's not a want, it's a need, like food and oxygen, to be witnessed and to be validated by the world around us. I think it absolutely makes sense that how important that is. I'm also curious as to what role physical movement and exercise has had for you, because I know that Pilates was something, I know that you've changed quite significantly the way that you move, the way you exercise. I'd love to hear more about that.
Sure. And I don't know if that was what part of my journey that I'd seen an article that was on Yahoo, and it said, can running make you fat? And I was overweight, especially after the implants where I gained and I think because for a number of reasons and a whole host of reasons, but so what I try to do is I gained and gained as I'm trying to run and barely.
I must have been really frustrating.
Oh yeah. And be on the treadmill or just be on, because I would be too tired to even run outside or be embarrassed, but just be on a treadmill and run and listen to the music to do my best to motivate me. And, I know that my adrenals were so fatigued. I was just totally burned out that running for me, just because, and this is something that I think and other thing folks might not understand, that they see somebody and they may be overweight. And I mean, I wasn't extremely overweight, but I was definitely, I did a 2 DEXA scans and put myself through radiation while I was heavy. And then afterwards to just show that my body fat was no longer close to 60% and was down to like 20 and 19, 18 or something. But for me, what really made the difference, Alex, was to then switch from that, just trying to run myself ragged, work out with this trainer, and you know, there's great trainers out there, but for me, lifting weights and doing that was not conducive. And I went back to what I'd done years ago. And, cause I lived in California early on in my early 20s. So I was doing it maybe where other people were, but doing yoga, which then now is everywhere. So I could do gentle yoga classes. Oh, and not these crazy now, like one, I went to the yoga and they're like faster, faster power yoga. And they're playing like, you know, some like total, you know, like these dropping these beats with the music, crazy stuff. I'm like, this isn't yoga, but I found the gentle yoga class that my chiropractor recommended of all people. And it was no heat, which wasn't good for me either, was not going to help. And that helped along with Pilates, where I could still do some It's strength training. I'm still toning, but I could slow it down and almost get lost in a meditative state. And that was a big part of it for me as well. And still is that I, in fact, I had my instructor move. So I was really bummed, but I found another one because even that time where I wasn't working out, because I'm not really good at motivated to do it myself. I don't have the machines, the Pilates machines. I could still go to yoga, but all of those most of those have become heated, really crazy classes where I like something slow, like a little bit slower, but the Pilates is great. And that's been, and you could do group classes or whatnot, or even do mat work at home. People have different things they like to do. You go to the gym, do a class, but the main point is to take it from this kind of almost high intensity training to the very gentle Pilates, gentle. If people aren't into yoga or they think there's dogma with that, then Pilates or stretching classes. And that was so helpful to me. That part, the mental changes, that was such a huge part from not only doing the exercises, but switching from the others, which I don't think I'll ever go back to. I know I need to always do a little bit of light weights, but I'll never go back to like really running on a treadmill or trying to lift heavy or anything like that. Yeah. It's just not for me.
So. That's super interesting. I think there's something that's so important about one listening to and honoring their own body's needs instead of going, I've read this thing in a book or this trainer's telling me that this is what I should be doing. And then trying to impose that upon one's body, which actually is a nice dovetail into. I was also curious as to around food and nutrition, around what you found has supported you there. Cause it's another place where there can be a lot of kind of preconceived ideas, which may or may not be what's most supportive for someone.
Sure. Well, I had run a raw food retreat for a number of years. So I still do love to have, of course, fruit is not forbidden for me, so I will have some fruit, but I was doing an almost all raw diet thinking I'm doing the healthiest thing, but and I will say this too, another huge part component of healing for me was healing the gut. So that was one of them, and that may be obvious for some people, but I didn't realize how unhealthy my gut had gotten. So all that raw food was not really helpful. So I switched to more cooked foods. I was kind of more plant-based. So I know for some people, they'll do like a lot of bone broth, depending on each person is different, of course, how their body would react. But no matter what, it was for me healing that gut and not eating so much of that, these raw meals that I was making constantly. Although I did, interestingly, for some people, and you hear different things. Some people say, I healed myself from this eating all raw. And this is the other thing, balance. I'm a Libra. And so I hear people like, I'm in high ketosis. I had somebody the other day said, I don't eat any carbs. And I'm not judging if they eat zero carbs. And then other people, of course, they're saying I eat 100% raw and I'm carving it up and eating, a zillion carbs. So I just, for me, it was a balance, but also, I will say that the gluten, and now since then they did a test that I'm not allergic, but I don't have gluten intolerance supposedly, but I'm still not eating the gluten, I do think. And, whether it's the gluten, they say, or the glyphosate, I just think the glyphosate and the gluten, I avoid genetically modified foods because even back then I admit that I would be at I won't say the name of it, but a particular chain that was supposed to go organic and go label their GMOs and never did and got bought out, a huge chain in the US. I would go there. Yeah. And so they now went reneged on their promise by 2020 or by now, even I think, to have all GMOs labeled, and they sneak those into the, something I grab at the deli or something I grab at the takeout. And I'm thinking I'm at the health food store. So I was really adamant about no genetically modified food. And also cutting back on the sugar, and I would replace it with things like, I would do a little, something that I would actually do is a little bit of raw chia, because I used to eat ice cream or something, even if it was organic, but I would switch to a little bit of raw but soaked chia seeds and a little bit of almond milk and stevia. And I know that people don't always like stevia or any of that, but for me, well, there was a study that leaked, I think it was with the Calvin formula, but with it, that came out about for Lyme, that it was that the stevia that they were doing, you know, higher doses of stevia was just as healing as antibiotics. I mean, that's a wow. study that was wow. a study that was done. So the stevia, I sometimes have to remember my own advice if I ever feel like I need to do some maintenance, was very helpful and replaced that processed sugar, because I would eat organic cookies or sometimes a little organic cake and I didn't, things like that. But I gave up that sugar and I gave up the gluten. I didn't give up most grains, but I also didn't go, I mean, I knew about keto now, keto's all the rage or whatever, paleo before that, but I guess I had more of a balance. And gave up most of the processed foods, and sadly had to give up a lot of the raw food that I would eat, and like my vegetables. Instead, I might do a nice cooked vegetable, a gentle vegetable, warm soup, and more warm foods, and not just eating all this cold raw food all the time, which I'm not looking down on the raw foodies, because I know there are millions of them, and I started doing that probably 16, 17 years ago, initially with the raw and running raw retreats, but I knew that I had to get away from that and heal my gut and more probiotics in whatever form people are doing that. If they're, you know, I mean, there are so many different ways, but healing that gut was a big yes. part of it. And I think that's when the weight came off, once the gut healed. And then I wasn't running myself ragged and running, you know, burning out my adrenals, literally running myself ragged. And so it was a number of things, plus following the protocol, which was difficult with the detox. And there were times, because also I had, and I don't know if I mentioned in there, I actually even drank some coffee, organic, but I then went from organic to half caf, or they call it half caffeine, and then to decaffeinated. And now, I mean, I may have it in a blue moon on a Sunday with somebody, but very rarely. I just gave yes. up the caffeine was also detrimental for me.
That's super interesting. And again, it just shows the amount of pieces to the jigsaw that have been important. And just, I'm mindful of time, but just before we kind of come to how people can find out more about you and your work, I'd just be curious as to what supports you now. I know that you travel internationally quite a lot. You're working very hard, clearly.
Yeah, so I know.
I'm curious as to, like, what, in terms of maintenance, like what you find supports you at this point.
That's a good idea. We just did a retesting of through a test for Lyme co-infections, because we were curious, especially with the Ehlers-Danlos, did I have any Lyme co-infections left? Now, you know how the testing can be, and I did a test, a company out of Colorado, but anyway, it doesn't matter. They all came back negative, but I don't know if that's true, because I always suspect. But for me, for maintenance, I would say that I have done fasts in the past, like long-term fasting. I know that's kind of all the rage, but for me, again, moderation. I'm not a big time faster. I know people say, you know, you're going to go in ketosis, heal yourself for 5, 6, 10 days not eating. But if somebody, and I have had bouts of fatigue from time to time, I'll talk about it with my audience. Nothing like what I had, and I hope I'm never in that place where I was before. But for me, not eating, if you have fatigue, just that, like, doesn't seem to, I understand that there are different views on that. Just for me personally, it doesn't work. So I will not long fasts. I have done intermittent fasting. I will also, and I mean, I do list the protocol, you know, for free in the book, but I'll try different supplementations. What I'm doing now, because I found out I was very low in B vitamins, which I guess I should know that, that because shockingly, I don't take supplements like I should. And I don't know that if it depends on the person, maybe I need more supplementation. So now I'm doing more B vitamins. I'm doing the B2, the B6, because we did some testing. Now they can test your, even do DNA testing through your urine, which is fascinating. So I did this complex urine test that tested my DNA. And I don't know how much I put some stock into the genetic testing, but not 100%. I don't, okay. So detox, I know I'm getting a little off subject here. I guess for me, the best thing that I do is, and I need to do desperately, is to take time off and then to possibly follow a protocol for maintenance. It might change from time to time, depending on what's going on, but I would, get on a protocol that's simple. That's it. I mean, if you really want to get into it, what I will do from time to time is like, I'll do a Banderil and Cemento. I mean, I could start naming those supplements, but I'll do like the Banderil and Cemento, which is what I started out with, because when I started on the Lyme protocol, I was doing a lot of the herbs. So I did maybe 30 drops of this 5 times a day. And I had like 50 different supplements, but I found that simplifying it for me, I guess to break it down for you, Alex, is that simplifying it for me made it easier, because sometimes it seems very daunting when they're saying you have to take 50 or 100 supplements. And I've gone through the Hippocrates health program in South Florida a few times, and there's a doctor there that truly believes that less is more. So I'll do a simple protocol. And if I do feel under the weather or kind of wanting to do a detox, I'll include some basics, get back to basics like in the book talk about, and do the Banderil and Cemento. I will do, sometimes I'll do, I probably need to do like a gallbladder cleanse. I'll do, if I feel like after the holidays, especially that I've been eating badly and my gut's out of whack, then I will kind of do a protocol of healing the gut and stopping any of those foods that may not be really helpful. But I don't do a ton of supplementation. Also, another thing that I'll do, which I know, the coffee enemas. So I do those. I don't know that I talk about that a lot publicly, but I think that, for some people in their protocols, and I know that, Dr. Klinghart had me course do enemas or colonics. And that's another thing for me. I know that everybody's different and they say you have to be careful with Ehlers-Danlos, but knock wood, I've never had a problem. But the colonics, especially if I'm kind of doing a cleanse, it's not just dietary or nutrition, also sauna, detoxing, do cold thermogenesis, get in the freezing cold pool or go jump in the Atlantic Ocean or something if it's cold out. And really, that may be too shocking for some people, but just cleansing my body, whether it be through sweating, the gentle exercises or doing a gentle cleanse. So I know that, I guess I don't, I that's where I struggle. I'll admit that I have to really write that down and format what my maintenance is, because I don't always do it.
What I think is also fascinating though is how you've learned to listen to your body and figure out what works. And I think that's often the thing that can be challenging for people, that they want to go in and go, this is the three things that everyone must do. But actually, your journey is a great example of trying different things along the way and discovering that this works for some people, this thing didn't work for me, but actually this is really working for me. Different things are helpful at different stages of the process. So it may be that one chapter there's one thing that really is important, and then it becomes a bit less important when something else becomes important later on. So it's that kind of ability to be a detective and listen to one's own body and one's own journey.
And also, I think, because I obviously struggle with even figuring out like what my own maintenance program is, but another thing that I think is important for people to realize is that what one supplement that works for someone may not for another, or a diet, because so much now we talk about diets. And I do put a little stock into blood type. I'm an A positive. I know Dr. Cowden, I mean, he's like eat right for your blood type or anything like that. But I mean, I put a little bit of stock into that and realize that maybe somebody who is an O, they're healing and eating far more protein or meat than I would, and if I'm that I may eat less. So, but then somebody could be an A type and thrive on. They could be a carnivore. You know, each person is different. But yes, that's words of wisdom what you said, and I think too that whether it be supplementation or exercise, some people may also thrive doing a high intensity. And I don't judge anyone who that is able to do that. But so oftentimes, especially with fatigue, we are unable to be doing, heavy,
yes,
hardcore workouts.
Yes. Erin, that's been absolutely fascinating. And I think it's really powerful to hear how someone's figured out their own journey and found the things that are helpful and supportive. For people that want to find out more about you and your work, please tell us about your website and some of the resources that are out there.
Sure. Yes. The website is Health Nut News. And I do have a book there called In the Limelight that I will be, I know we've just been talking about this week, updating soon. But even if they download it, then they could get an update with the new version. And so it's Health Nut News at the top of the page. They can get onto the newsletter or download the book. But also we do a lot of breaking stories 7 days a week. And and I guess on that closing note, that because I do take my work very, very, very seriously. But I think that's another part of the maintenance is always taking some breaks. I've hired some new people to help with our little team is growing quickly. So yeah, they can find it at Health Nut News, find the book there. We have a lot of updates and breaking news there well on the website that they can see just about every day. So.
Fantastic. 7 days a week, because that's when you're
7
working.
7 days a week, I know, right? Yeah. Fantastic. But taking breaks when I can.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks.